Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Velocity of Content. It's Friday, April 16th, 2021. Every week we check in with Publishers Weekly on news from the world of publishing. Andrew Albanese, PW Senior Writer, joins me today with his reporting and analysis. Welcome back to the program, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
So hopes that the global publishing community would soon return to trade shows and other large gatherings have fallen victim recently of the persisting, even insisting pandemic. First, the Bologna Children's Book Fair canceled all in-person programming set for June. And now the London Book Fair has likewise shuttered its own physical events, also scheduled in late June. For the moment, at least, the Frankfurt Book Fair remains committed to some form of live event.
Yeah, so lots of developments in the last week, and it won't be any surprise to listeners of this show because we've sort of doubted from the beginning that in-person shows were going to be possible by the middle of this year. And just as we recorded last week, we heard from Bologna, and just this week on Thursday, London confirmed that they too were abandoning plans to host an in-person event and will go online only. Now, look, I'm not going to fault either London or Bologna for their eagerness to get live book fairs going again. I'm right there with them. But as we discussed, it was always going to be a long shot. And, you know, alas, the vaccine rollouts in Europe have been somewhat complicated. The virus is clearly anything but crushed at the moment. In fact, it's rising in certain parts of the country, in certain parts of the world. So I think it was the right thing to do, right? Caution demands that we take our time. Do we spend another year of book fair season going virtual? And that we do what we can to learn from this forced digital experimentation so that when we do come back, book fairs can offer the greatest value and the widest possible engagement to attendees around the industry.
And meanwhile, Publishers Weekly's own U.S. Book Show is picking up steam, Andrew. The event, set for May 25 through the 27, was planned from the start as online only. And this week, PW announced a slate of editor panels.
Yeah, we're getting really excited about the way the show is shaping up. Listeners can check out a preliminary look at the terrific lineup, a partial lineup anyway, of the great editors and authors who are going to be featured at some of the panels at the show. And you know, we'll talk more about U.S. Book Show in the coming weeks, I'm sure. But by all means, check out the program that's been released so far. And you know, we hope to see you there, there being online, of course, for what will be the first annual U.S. Book Show.
Accounting books for publishers and booksellers have now closed on the first quarter of 2021, and signs are it's been another strong showing for sales.
Yeah, it really is quite incredible, isn't it? And you know, the conversation here I'm going to remark right up front is going to be mostly focusing on trade sales. But you know, it was just around this time last year that the lockdowns were in place, and we were all very nervous about how the pandemic was going to impact the book business. And here we are a year later in the midst of a growth curve that is really greater than anything that I can recall in my 22 plus years of reporting on the business. Now, the wealth isn't being shared equally, but suffice it to say that, you know, surging book sales are better than the alternative, which the alternative was certainly a possibility as the uncertainty of the pandemic set in last year. But that hasn't happened. And by the numbers, again, what we're seeing is simply remarkable. My boss, PW editorial director Jim Milliot, wrote last week that unit sales of print books were up a remarkable 29.2% in the first quarter of 2021 over the same period of 2020. And that, of course, is to outlets that report to NPD BookScan. Now, that eye-opening number really shouldn't be that much of a surprise because our listeners will recall that sales sort of slumped in mid-March last year when, you know, we finally started to realize what the pandemic was going to mean for business and that we were going to be shutting down. But nevertheless, analysts say that the hefty increases we saw in the first quarter of 2021 suggest that there's this continuing surge in book buying that began last spring and clearly is going to carry over into 2021.
All right. So tell us more about that, because we've established this is not a flash in the pan, but you say strong sales may continue for a while.
Well, I think what's especially promising in the numbers is that all six of the major categories tracked by BookScan had double-digit increases in the quarter. All four print formats posted gains. Unit sales were up 24.6% in adult nonfiction. That's the industry's largest category, for example. Sales of adult fiction increased 34.7%. Sales in the juvenile fiction category were up almost 40%, 39.6, I think the number is. And there's some big titles out there in the market now. You have Dave Pilkey's Mothering Heights, which is the 10th installment in the Dog Man series. Very popular around my house, I must say. Number one, it was number one on the list. It sold more than 411,000 copies in just 2 weeks on sale. You have Kristen Hannah's The Four Winds, which was published in early February. That sold almost 400,000 copies. I think 390 was the number. And a third new title that cracked the top 10 list recently was CNN's Dr. Sanjay Gupta. Keep Sharp is the name of that book. That sold more than 245,000 copies. And of course, after a recent turn in the news, you have big sales for Dr. Seuss titles, with four titles in the top 10. Now, our listeners will recall that interest in Dr. Seuss books, which is always pretty strong, actually jumped a bit after Dr. Seuss Enterprises, which is, you know, the entity that oversees the author's estate, said it was going to stop printing six books that were written between 1937 and 76 because of concerns that the titles portrayed people in hurtful ways. Of course, none of those six books that are not going to be printed anymore have shown meaningful sales in years. Many of them are out of print. And I think the manufactured talking point about cancel culture has really only fueled sales of Seuss's most beloved and popular titles already. And of course, with graduations upcoming, Oh, The Places You'll Go is going to shoot up the list again, as it does every year. A new entry to the bestseller list, too, we should point out, is The Hill We Climb by Amanda Gorman. That was published on March 30th. It was the number 12 selling title in the quarter. It's top of the bestseller list right now on the PW site. Sold 214,000 copies in its first week. It was a much anticipated book after Gorman read that stirring poem at the inauguration of President Joe Biden in January, and print sales appear to be really strong off the bat.
Some wonderful stories about success there, Andrew, but the wealth isn't necessarily shared by everyone when it comes to book sales. Indeed, there's evidence for that assertion in bookstore figures announced this week.
Yeah, so the not-so-good news is that February bookstore sales fell by 22.3% compared to the same period in 2020. This, according to the preliminary estimate that was released this week by the U.S. Census Bureau. The decline is higher than the 16.7% drop in bookstore sales that we saw in January, that also compared to 2020. And you know, the consensus is that bad weather and more lockdowns around the nation because of COVID-19 are likely the reasons for the higher decline in sales in February. And to put this in perspective, for the entire retail sector, February sales were actually up 2.9%. And they were 5.3% for the first 2 months of 2021 over 2020. So bookstores are sort of going in the opposite direction there, against the trend. Now, February may not be the best marker. You know, the industry, I think, is going to get a much better sense of whether bookstore sales are showing signs of life and improving when we get to March and beyond March, because, you know, that's when sales began to decline when the pandemic set in last year. They were down like a third, 33.4% in 2020 compared to March 2019. So when we get the March numbers for 2021, we'll get a much better idea of where we are with this. Still, we know many indie bookstores have struggled, and in the coming months, we're going to start to get a sense of whether things are going to turn around.
And for one bookseller, though, a turnaround may indeed have started. This week, we have Barnes & Noble's chief speaking to publishers, and he told us things are looking all right.
Yeah, so things appear to be looking up at Barnes & Noble. That, according to CEO James Daunt, who spoke during an appearance last week at the Independent Book Publishers Association's annual IBPA University. Daunt was in conversation with Carla Olson, who's the publisher of Patagonia Books. And the story reported by my colleague Ed Nwaka, it's up on the PW site, was a wide-ranging conversation that covered a range of subjects, including the impact of 2020 store closures on Barnes & Noble, to how, finally, post-pandemic, we might see Daunt's plans for Barnes & Noble finally playing out, including the growing autonomy of individual Barnes & Noble store managers. Now, that was a hallmark of Daunt's leadership at British chain Waterstones. He gave the leaders of the individual stores at Waterstones great latitude to basically run their stores like indie stores, part of the sort of federated company that was Waterstones. So the first bit of good news Daunt reported is that all Barnes & Noble stores across the country are open. So that's the start. Once your doors are open, you can start selling books. And Daunt pointed out that Barnes & Noble is also no longer taking co-op advertising from publishers because these individual store managers have such wide latitude about how they run their bookstores. Daunt basically said that, you know, you can't do what they've done, which is give so much responsibility to stores and then charge publishers for co-op placement. So basically, booksellers are going to be choosing what they want to sell, how they're going to display it. So nobody's going to be paying for that there. And that's a big departure for the chain. And I must say that the company is actually looking to get more revenue from and to focus on getting books into readers' hands, on selling books to the customers, than getting money from publishers. Pretty refreshing. Further, individual stores are also responsible for their own stock replenishment. And the hope being there that this is going to help reduce returns, which are hovering at about a 25% rate. Last year's shutdowns also gave the company an opportunity to tear the stores apart, Don said. And that included, you know, updating the stores by throwing out old furniture, doing some redecorating, thinking about the merchandising, especially how the books are presented. You know, so you may notice that your local Barnes & Noble has changed a little bit. And that, too, I think is exciting.
And what did he have to say, Daunt, about 2020 sales and the outlook going forward?
Yeah, so Daunt didn't volunteer specific data about last year's sales, but he did say that the company's larger stores in urban downtown areas were most negatively impacted by the pandemic because, you know, with offices effectively empty and the reduction in travel and tourism, well, city centers, frankly, over the last year were lacking foot traffic. He also noted that that may be relatively permanent, you know, as companies start to reconfigure their office plans. But nevertheless, given where things were a year ago, the quote of the talk, I think, was that things are much better now. So, you know, pandemic aside, Barnes & Noble, you know, we've talked about them quite a bit on the show. They were sort of a disaster when Daunt took over, right? You just go back and listen to our podcast and how often we talked about the chain's losses and their setbacks. Hearing this kind of fresh vision from James Daunt, which is exactly what he was brought in to do, I think is pretty refreshing and should give the industry, I think, a little shot of hope that Barnes & Noble is going to turn things around. Now, looking ahead, Daunt emphasized that a key to Barnes & Noble's success is going to be ensuring that its staff sees bookselling as a true vocation and that the employees get the support they need from management. And that may not sound like a bold strategy, but it really is. I think it's a very bold and well thought out strategy. Is it going to work in an Amazon dominated world where people are suddenly, especially in the last year, have become used to having books delivered overnight or within 2 days at prices that are deeply discounted? You know, can you turn to individual, the charm of individual bookselling, hand selling in Barnes & Noble stores? Is that going to work for the company? We will see. But you cannot deny that finally, Barnes & Noble at least has a strategy that is designed to compete on its strengths, which is its physical locations. And on that, I'm going to quote James Daunt's remarks here. Let me pull that up. He says, as a chain bookseller, we are now allowing genuine autonomy to individual booksellers to curate books and create really dynamic bookstores. He went on to say that we as booksellers within the context of the large chain will apply our passion with genuine commitment and with genuine purpose. In that sense, we are a million miles away from Amazon.
Kindle Vella, a self-publishing format aimed at mobile readers, debuted this week from Amazon.
Yeah, so Kindle Vella is a new service that's going to allow authors to publish short, serialized fiction that can be read on smartphones and mobile devices via the Kindle app. And Amazon said this week that the service is accepting submissions this week for publication sometime within the next few months. You know, and basically to me, this is pretty ingenious, right? It's a chance to turn the phenomenon of binge watching that we've seen a lot on some of these services, Netflix and Amazon Prime included, into binge reading. You know, the program is designed for serialized, and by that I mean 600 to 5,000 word short fiction. The program envisions initial story episodes will be free, but to keep reading, consumers will then have to buy tokens. And the price of a token was not announced, but what was announced is that authors are going to receive 50% of the token price. So much more to come on this as we learn details about how that's going to actually function. I just would make two broader points about Amazon here. And the first is that we don't know why Amazon decided on a 50-50 revenue split for the service or what the price of the token is going to be, but it's fair to say that the company set those terms itself. And this, to me, is one of the key things with Amazon that I think we have to pay attention to, that it's a really powerful platform which entirely dictates terms to the people who use it, often, in fact, almost always without negotiation, use it or don't. That's the way it goes. And while it's an opportunity, I think, for a lot of writers and a lot of readers to read a lot more, I think the take it or leave it aspect of Amazon's programs, given the power of the platform and that it's not an agnostic platform, I mean, it's powered by consumer data. I think this is a trend that bears continued watching because, once again, Amazon is treating writers like it treats any other supplier. And the second thing here is that we hear so much about how Amazon competes unfairly with publishers, and those are very valid concerns. But it's not the whole story, because Kindle Vella, this new program, I think, is an example of Amazon filling a need in the publishing landscape, something that traditional publishers would not think to or are not capable of doing. So we can talk about Amazon's practices, whether they're fair or unfair, but a part of this conversation also is how, in the digital age, how virtually all of the innovation in the reading environment and the business of reading has come from outside the traditional publishing world, and a lot of it from Amazon. And I think Kindle Vella, this program, is another example of Amazon innovating in a space that should be within the ambit of traditional publishing, but isn't.
Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly Senior Writer, thanks for joining me today.
My pleasure, as always.
Coming up on the next podcast from CCC, as part of the upcoming STM Spring Conference to be held online April 27th through the 29th, the STM Association will release a white paper, Best Practice Principles for Ethical, Trustworthy, and Human-Centric AI. Joris van Rossum, STM's Director of Research Integrity, explains that AI is especially relevant where large volumes of data and information are processed, leading directly to scholarly and scientific publishers.
First of all, we are key providers of information and data and articles on which AI is run as input data and as training data. And this is, of course, we are really well designed to do so, having so much experience in curating data, selecting data, reviewing data, etc. So we are in a unique position to really provide high quality data. And as we all know, garbage in, garbage out. Having the right data, having high quality data is really crucial for an efficient and a trustworthy application of AI.
Principles for Trustworthy AI, next on this CCC podcast. Our co-producer and recording engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. You can subscribe to the program wherever you go for podcasts and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. I'm Christopher Keneally. Thanks for listening, and join us again soon for another Velocity of Content podcast from CCC.